We'll probably go and make a start. We're just past the time slot. So thank you everyone for coming. My name's Corey Adolphus. I'm a hybrid cloud architect with NetApp. I've been with NetApp for 11 and a half years, so quite a while, and I've seen a lot of changes in our industry. NetApp obviously has been a traditionally an on-premise infrastructure supplier to our customers, or IT systems, basically storage arrays and data management and so forth. But today I'm going to talk to you about a solution that we have currently shipping in the market, which is all about how you can securely and efficiently send your backups from your on-premise infrastructure or even infrastructure that you have deployed in the cloud, and how you can send that to Microsoft Azure. Now, of course, I'm at a Microsoft event, so that's the cloud that I'm going to talk about predominantly, but you'll see that we support more than just Microsoft's cloud. I'll pause throughout the talk to take questions, and there should be time at the end, and I've also got a demo to show you, so hopefully that'll keep things a little bit more interesting than just PowerPoint. So to start off with, I'll talk about some industry trends that should be no surprise to everyone in the room here, but it's certainly the things that NetApp and our senior leadership and our strategy people are always looking at. Well, what do we need to do to continue to innovate as a company so that we can ensure that we've got solutions that meet what our customers are looking for in the market? And so obviously, we've got to look at what the industry trends are. And absolutely no surprise, of course, I'm sure that people here have heard of cloud in this conference this week, at least once. I don't think that you could go to any session without hearing about it, and I'm not going to buck that trend, right? So I'm going to talk about that as well. And, the way we see it is that, broadly speaking, there are, you can group, your on-premise infrastructure, if you've got anything around virtualization and self-service and so forth around private cloud, and then there are cloud service providers in the market that many of them are based, that base their technology or their service offerings on NetApp under the covers in terms of storage, and that's companies like Dimension Data and Data3 and Datacom and all of these in-country and boutique service providers that are still providing cloud services. And then of course hyperscale clouds like Microsoft Azure and Amazon and so forth. And what we're seeing is absolutely that their customers are not picking any one of these places to run 100% of their requirements for their IT, right, for the services that they need to deliver to the business. It's very much a mixture of, obviously, on-premise. There's still the bulk of technology for most customers is run on-premise, but there's no one other cloud provider that does everything else for them. There's a bit of Office 365, there might be some dev test in Amazon, they might have their SAP hosted with Dimension Data, there could be a number of cloud offerings, both internal and external, that make up the total IT landscape. And so it really is a hybrid cloud world that is undeniable in terms of that. That's where customers are taking their choices, is to select cloud locations that make the most sense as opposed to a one-size-fits-all. Not saying that there aren't customers out there, companies out there that are doing all in to a particular cloud, but that's certainly not the norm, and I'm sure that most of you would agree. So NetApp, we're all about helping our customers get the data to the location that they want to be able to consume services from. So whether that be that you're running production in an on-premise private cloud or on-premise virtualized infrastructure, but you want to be able to leverage that same production data set and do dev test in Azure, as an example. So we help customers get the data using our technology as the underlying data fabric to be able to get the data from one place to another securely and efficiently, and enable you to leverage it in its native format at the destination that you send it to for things like dev test, for DR, or many other workloads, and I'll go through some of those today. But one of the huge trends is to do with backup and leveraging public cloud specifically for backup data and archive data. And a survey recently from ESG Group just in the last couple of months asked the question, what's the predominant use case for cloud that has been adopted in your organisation to date or are planning to adopt? And backup and archive was up there around almost half of respondents saying that they're either already using it or are planning to use it in the next 12 months. Followed up by test and dev, as I mentioned that as a use case earlier, and also disaster recovery coming in after that. So, you know, backup and archive, huge thing, and NetApp have made some big investments in this space. And there are some other things that are also, you know, in terms of industry trends that are pushing people towards this and making it a very viable solution to leverage public cloud for backup specifically. And really that is the plummeting price of public cloud storage, right? This is the basic object style storage. You know, there's no surprise, you know, that was sort of pioneered by Amazon with their S3, and they introduced Glacier a couple of years after that. Microsoft Azure with the blob storage, Google Cloud, and recently Google brought in their Nearline offering as another tier, cheaper tier with slightly less performance in terms of recall speeds. So the pricing just keeps going down, right? It's a race to the bottom, and that only means good things in terms of companies being able to look at this and go, well, wow, you know, these prices are getting so low that there is no way that I can run an on-premise infrastructure unless it's at absolutely monolithic scale for these kind of prices. Right? And so NetApp, we're helping customers leverage this with some technology to ensure that things still remain even more efficient to make the price, the effective price of some of these, even, you know, 0.1 cent per gig per month or less, and being able to do it securely with some of our encryption technology, and I'll go through that. So this, I guess, coming together of perfect storm almost of these, this plummeting cloud price and some technology that we have, and also internet speeds are improving and getting more cost effective to get higher bandwidth. But there are still these common on-premise backup, typically tape backup infrastructure challenges that almost anyone that deals with tape would probably agree with. I would certainly think so. You know, slow. No one is ever happy with the speed of tape, and particularly the speed of restores. If you needed to rely on a tape, or particularly an offsite tape, but even a tape in general, if it's loaded into into the system to perform a restore of a critical system, well, that's already, you're in a pretty bad shape, right? You should never have to rely on tape as your primary means of recovery. You should have some kind of either primary storage snapshot or on-disk backup. So tape is just no longer meeting the requirements in terms of recoverability, but it may still, or it has until now, still been the medium of choice for long-term archival-style backups, right? And that's what I'm going to talk about today, how we can now absolutely eliminate tape with a solution that we have in the market combined with public cloud to address not only the speed, but also the expense. You know, if you just looked at the media price of tape, the cost per gigabyte is dirt cheap, right? It is still cheaper than the cost per gigabyte of cloud storage. But it's not when you take into consideration the cost of the libraries, the maintenance of that, the cost of purchasing capital costs of tape drives and then maintaining those, and then the cost of paying an offsite provider to send your tapes offsite and keep them in a secure vault and do the recalls when you need to, plus the tape media itself. And that's ignoring any admin overhead associated with that. So people time, which is absolutely a cost. Anyone that runs the business will know that the people cost is one of the largest costs that you'll have in your business. Right? And there's a huge burden cost for administration of tape. And then that's not even considering anything to do with what's the impact on the business if you have to do a restore from an archival backup, legal discovery, you know, a former employee disgruntled is suing the business and they need to get their email back from 6 months ago, all right, those sorts of things. What if you can't recover that? What's the cost to the business to be able to do that? So if you even ignore all of that, there are still some huge regular operational expenses and capital expenses associated with a traditional tape backup infrastructure. I've talked about the risk. What's the risk of not being able to restore? If it's a large court case, that could be huge sums of money in litigation that could be involved there. Tapes can also have significant, like they don't have the properties associated with them to actually maintain longevity like you would think. You think, okay, we'll write something to tape, it's going to last forever if it's kept in the absolute pristine environmental condition with the right humidity and the right temperature and so forth and light conditions, then maybe you'll get 5 years. But anyone who's written something on tape and thinks that they're going to be able to read it back in 7 years, about 1 in 10 tapes might actually read after that time. So most, and even then, will you have a tape drive that can read something, you know, a DLT from 7 years ago, right? You know, you might be writing LTO6s today, but who's to say in 7 years' time when you go to recall that tape, you've got an LTO drive, let alone the software to be able to restore it from. Right, so there's a lot of risk. I mean, what the company that you use to offsite those tapes, right? That van is coming every single day. You know, that driver, I'm sure, is a great guy, but, you know, you might throw the box of tapes on the front seat, park at a cafe. You know, the sun's blaring in through the cabin window of the truck. You know, heating up those tapes, goes to get his coffee, comes back. You know, yeah, have a coffee, have a smoke, then drive to the offsite facility. Those tapes are dead before they even got into the vault. Right? Way too much risk and complexity. I mean, if you want to maintain a tape infrastructure that's going to actually last the length of time, you do actually have to put a lot of effort into actually what they call greening up the tapes. So you've got LTO6, let's say LTO8's come out and you decide, okay, now we need to invest in that. You've got to recall all of your tapes, read them all back in, and then write them all back out again into the new media, and then you can dump the old so that you can ensure that you can read that, well, hope that you can read it in a couple of years' time, right? That's greening up the tapes, so changing technologies. So I don't think any of that is fun. We've got a solution to avoid all of that. Right, it's called AltaVault. It's our cloud integrated storage appliance, and it's available in both a hardware appliance that you can install as, you know, physical hardware in your on-premise infrastructure or in a colo, wherever your primary IT is, or you can deploy it as a virtual appliance as well, supported on both VMware and Hyper-V. And if you've got applications running in the cloud, so in AWS or in Azure, and you want to protect those workloads, so back those workloads up in using the same tools and processes and therefore get the same visibility as like what you would do with your on-premise infrastructure, then you can also deploy AltaVault as a native cloud appliance in those clouds. All right, so there's a number of ways that you can get this. It basically, in a nutshell, it enables you to save around 90% of the cost of comparable on-premise backup infrastructures, typically tape, but also alternative, maybe legacy purpose-built backup appliances as well. Right? And it does so as a direct drop-in replacement for that technology. You do not have to replace your backup software. So it can work with pretty much the laundry list of all of the leading backup software applications out there. You don't have to use a proprietary NetApp data mover. Right? You can use NetApp Snap Protect, but you could use Commvault, Veeam, Veritas, right? EMC Networker, you could use IBM, TSM, now called Spectrum Protect. You can even do direct dumps from, say, databases like SQL. SQL DBAs love to do dump to disk, right? And then you have the backup application then goes and does a file system sweep to back up those dump files. You can avoid one of those steps and you can have the SQL DBA have their SQL databases dumped directly to a SIF share running off the AltaVault, right? So the AltaVault exists in your network and it appears as a NAS device, so it presents out as many SIF shares or NFS shares as you want from the one appliance. And so, for example, Oracle running on Linux or Unix, they can do RMAN dumps directly to an NFS export rather than, again, going to a file system on your primary SAN, taking up expensive storage, and then again requiring that extra step of having to back that up using a file system agent from your backup software. And generally, we find that most customers don't have 100% coverage of their entire IT from a backup perspective with one application. There's more often than not, you know, they might have one primary backup application, let's call it Commvault, and that covers about 80%, but there might be some physical servers or the VMware environment that they decide, you know what, I'm going to just do that differently because I've got a better way of doing that that I've found works better for whatever reason. Or again, the SQL DBAs just love to do dump to disk. They don't want agents touching the database, those sorts of things. So there's usually more than one backup product in most environments. And so the beauty of AltaVault is that it can actually take as many streams from as many systems as you have, all into the one appliance. And then what it does is, on the wire, as data's coming in and from wherever it's coming in, it does inline variable length deduplication, inline compression, and inline encryption using encryption keys that only you know, right? We certainly don't know what they are, and no cloud provider knows what they are, right? So inline dedupe, inline compression, inline encryption, all as the data's coming in on the wire, right? And it's global dedupe and compression across time. So if you back something up on November of 2015, and then November of 2016 comes along and you just happen to back up, you know, the same thing, just because a year has gone by, we will still find that that was a duplicate and eliminate that duplicate. So it's global across the entire appliance, irrespective of how and where the data comes in from and irrespective of time window. And we will find those duplicates and remove them. We then, after we've deduped, compressed and encrypted, we then store a copy locally in the local cache and send it to the public cloud or private cloud that you choose. So from public cloud, which is definitely the predominant deployment mode that most customers use this for, as I said, Azure, Amazon, including Amazon Glacier, and IBM SoftLayer, AT&T, you know, Rackspace, the laundry list of the predominant cloud providers in the market, we support out of the box. And as I said, private cloud as well, if you, for whatever reason, you're like, nah, I'm still going to want my backups to be going to an on-premise object storage repository, then we support that as well. OpenStack Swift, very, very common. NetApp, we have our own software called Storage Grid Web Scale. That's also an object store that is obviously fully supported by our product. In terms of restores, because we have a local cache and we can size that so you can expand that as your requirements, you know, your primary data set grows, generally speaking, we would size the appliance to have enough local disk space to be able to cache at least a month worth of full backups. All right? Again, after doing dedupe and compression, we get a lot of density out of the appliance storage. So that way, if you needed to perform a restore, and again, you wouldn't still try and rely on something like this as the only backup. I mean, we do have customers doing that, but generally speaking, for a very, very critical application, you might have something like primary storage array snapshots and those sorts of things. And of course, NetApp, we, you know, data management company, we have that as well. But from a more archival or longer term backup, that's what the AltaVault is generally positioned as. And if you needed to perform a recovery of anything, you know, again, from the last four weeks as an example, then that's going to come back at line speed straight out of the local cache. It's not going to touch the cloud at all. Right? It's only if something going back 6 months, right, where, you know, that use case around a legal discovery and you've just got to go way back, well, bit similar to if the tapes are offsite at a you know, vendor like Iron Mountain or Recall or something like that, it's going to take you a day or so to get those tapes back and load it. Well, with AltaVault, we'll automatically go and get it for you from the back-end cloud. Depending on which one you choose, pretty much all of them except Glacier, they have about, you know, a two-second response time. That's pretty good, right? So it's not 2 milliseconds, but it doesn't need to be. This is backup, right? So 2 seconds, then the bytes will start flying back, and then it'll just depend on the size of the restore that you're doing and your WAN link as to how quickly we can get that back down from the cloud. But that's all seamlessly handled for you. Glacier is a little bit different because it has a 4-hour minimum time before the first byte comes back, and so we have full integration with that to be able to handle the nuances and the idiosyncrasies of that particular cloud. I'll just pause there for a moment and see if there are any questions before I move on. At the back.
Yeah, we've got SnapVault.
You've got SnapVault, yes?
SnapVault, they're probably going back 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the question is, you know, if you've got SnapVault, which is a NetApp to NetApp backup and replication all-in-one technology. That's when you're running NetApp's primary storage arrays, which run the ONTAP operating system and a secondary to be able to back up to. Then basically, yeah, it transfers just the differences and stores versions and so forth. So at this point in time, the AltaVault, it does run a completely separate operating system, so it's not running ONTAP. So you can't snap Vault directly to AltaVault. What the process is, and we have customers doing this where they've got their primary NetApp system and still doing a Snap Vault, but they've shortened the Snap Vault retention to maybe 90 days, and then they're backing up what they would have still been putting to tape for their longer term. They're backing that up using either Snap Protect or Commvault or something like that to be able to do backups from the Snap Vault secondary system to an Alt Vault. But it very much appears just like a tape backup in that sense. It just happens to be on a deduplicating cloud integrated appliance. So the short answer is it's not natively integrated with our Snap Vault technology, but we did a technology preview demonstration at our user conference in Las Vegas a month ago, where we actually showed Snap Vault directly into AltaVault. So we've set ourselves a goal of being able to productionize that. You know, I can't use dates, but it is something that we are working on. Okay, does that answer your question?
Yeah, that does.
Okay.
Just two other small questions. One is, if you have a petabyte of inbound data,
mm-hmm.
how much
disk do you need? So if you have a petabyte of primary workload that needs to be backed up, how much disk space do you need on the AltaVault itself? So it's going to depend. It's a good question. It is going to depend on the type of data. But if it, you know, to use a bell curve of, you've got a bit of VMware and you've got a bit of Oracle and you've got a bit of SQL and you've got a bit of file system. So the general sort of, you know, spread of data, you're going to be able to get over time. You know, once you do fulls and incrementals or type of backup, you're going to be able to get upwards of 25, 30 to 1 deduplication and compression. Combined, right, dedupe and compression. But for that initial first full, where you're doing that first full petabyte, we might get 3 to 1, we might get 5 to 1. It's going to be dependent upon the amount of duplication we find in that first baseline transfer. And now if you want to make sure, like let's say we just get 2 to 1, which is very conservative, right, then that petabyte would become 500 terabytes. If you want to ensure that at least one entire full is cached locally, then you'd need 500 terabytes in that example of cache capacity on the AltaVault. But I'd certainly like to have the opportunity to chat to you afterwards, because I've got sizing tools to help actually crunch this specifically.
If it's similar sizing tools to what we would use with the original device that we use, mm-hmm.
Sorry?
Mm-hmm.
It's similar, although the dedupe technology in AltaVault is different to the dedupe technology built into NetApp ONTAP primary storage arrays. That we use a fixed block background process dedupe in ONTAP. This one's an inline variable segment length, so it's designed for large sequential streams from backup applications, and backup applications tend to put headers and wrap things up in tarballs or proprietary formats, and we pull all of that apart and actually find the commonality amongst that, irrespective of what they do. It's one of the very, very good techniques that we use in this. It's a huge amount of memory in these boxes, because it does it all in memory as the data's coming in, and it's loaded up the entire memory map of previous backups that it's seen, so it's keeping that all in memory. But look, yeah, we do have sizing tools. We'd have to run it through your data set and see what we come out with. Any other questions before I move on? No? Okay. So what are some of the use cases? I've talked about backup, right? And I've talked about, well, okay, you could modernize your current backup infrastructure. So you could be running with tape, right? A lot of people do. A lot of people also have, purpose-built backup appliances that might be coming to end of life or need a maintenance renewal or need capacity expansions, right? So we've got, firstly, replacing, legacy tape with AltaVault is the predominant use case. We've got augmenting an existing purpose-built backup appliance. So we've got a customer where they've decided, I'm going to keep all of my, the last 30 days worth of daily incrementals are going to go to my data domain box, but I want to cap the amount of capacity that I use on that. I don't want to have to expand that anymore, and I'm going to send all my monthly fulls and yearly fulls to the AltaVault, and it's going to send it off to the cloud. Right? It just means they were able to avoid the additional storage shelf capacity that they had to add on to their data domain, data center floor space, all of that sort of stuff. Now, all of their longer-term stuff that they hope never to have to go back to, but they have to keep anyway, because it's just, that's the requirement of their business or possibly regulations. So they've augmented, right? And then when the when they maybe come up to maintenance renewal, they might then consider, well, maybe I'll just move all my backups at that point to the AltaVault and decommission the data to make. But, you know, we work happily beside that because you can just configure your backup application to just say these jobs go here and these jobs go here. Easy. Right? You don't have to rip and replace your backup software or make any major modifications to drop an AltaVault into the architecture. We also support a mode called, we call it cold storage mode, but you could think of it as an archival target. So using the AltaVault as a place where, you know, universities use it for this use case where, you know, they might have their primary storage arrays, whatever they might be, and they're doing research projects, I don't know, genome sequencing or, you know, drug sampling or whatever it is, you know, trying to, you know, map out the stars or whatever it might be, but they're doing a project, a research project, and then when the research is finished, you know, and they've published their results, but they have to keep that data forever, right? Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years is effectively what they have to keep it for, but they don't want it on their primary storage systems. Could be supercomputers that, you know, they just cannot afford to leave it there, but they want it online in the sense they don't want it on tape. They want it on an alternative that they can recall at a reasonable pace should they need to. So cold storage mode is very popular for that. Basically, they finish their project and they move it from their where it was running onto the AltaVault. The AltaVault then ships it off to the cloud. We can do billions of objects when we run in cold storage mode. So very, very good use case for that. And of course, for more of an enterprise archival use case, so if you've got file servers and you have something like a Commvault archiving or Symantec Enterprise Vault for email archiving or file archiving, again, we're fully integrated with that. So again, those applications can archive stuff, you know, files that are greater than a megabyte and haven't been modified in a year and, you know, whatever rule set that you might want to apply, emails as well. Again, AltaVault can be a great place for that, just with the ability for it to crush down the amount of actual space that it takes up and then send it to these very, very affordable public cloud as opposed to taking up a lot of data center space with on-premise disk or tape-based solutions. It can also help with disaster recovery. So with an AltaVault, if you've got an on-premise deployment and you've been backing up, you know, terabytes and terabytes or petabytes of data to it, what happens if you have an issue in your primary data center where that AltaVault is? Maybe, I don't know, someone tripped the fire suppression system and, you know, the box got flooded. So it's all destroyed. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but if it does, how would you recover? There's a couple of ways. I'll talk about the bottom one here first. If you have a DR site, then NetApp, we provide you for no charge the virtual appliance. If you've got a physical NetApp, then you can deploy our virtual appliance for no charge. So to deploy a virtual appliance, of course, you need some virtualization hardware, so that's a consideration for your DR site, but if you do have some virtualization capability in your DR site, you can run the AltaVault virtual appliance. You import the configuration from that you carefully saved from the primary appliance prior to the disaster, and import that into this virtual appliance, and it basically takes on the personality of the failed primary appliance, including the encryption keys, the cloud backend cloud bucket keys, and so forth. It then pulls down the metadata from the cloud because the primary appliance, when you're backing up to it, 100% of the data that went to it, including the metadata, is always sent to the cloud. So the cloud becomes the DR for it. So you spin up this virtual appliance and it pulls the metadata down, right? And all of the files, all of the backups, however you were sending data to the original appliance, appear. They're stubs there, they're not the actual files. And then you can optionally go in and say, now pre-populate the last week's worth of backups or the CEO's file share folder and so forth. You know, you can just prioritize what data you actually pull back, because you don't want to pull back terabytes and terabytes of data straight away. You might want to just prioritize what comes back in the event of such a major disaster. So that's all fully configurable. The alternative is you could deploy the AltaVault cloud appliance, let's say into Azure, and then do the same process. Give that cloud appliance the same, import the configuration from the that was being run on the primary appliance on-premise, and then that cloud appliance will go and connect to the back-end cloud bucket, pull down the metadata, and everything's ready to go. So you can then recover into the cloud. So some customers are looking at dumping their DR site as a full-time, quite expensive facility and leveraging cloud where they can for DR. And this is a way that we enable that with Ultivault. Just an example around, I've mentioned that the economics are quite compelling, but here's a real-world example. We've got a customer where they had 100 terabytes of data to protect, and they had have a 35% year-on-year compound annual growth rate of their primary data set in terms of how much it's growing year-on-year. Leveraging our Ultivault AVA 400, our physical appliance model, first year included capital costs of the NetApp Ultivault, plus we did a direct comparison with, you know, some capital costs for tape. And then there on, year after year, and this only includes tape media, tape offsite vaulting, tape library and tape drive maintenance, and the Ultivault maintenance, and the cloud backend storage, cloud, which in this case was Azure, and comparing it to LTO6 tape. And it paid for itself within the first year, and a five-year ROI, I mean, they haven't got to 5 years, so that's projected after they're at 3 years at the moment. It's projected to be upwards of 285%. So, I mean, almost, if you've got anything above about 20 terabytes, I would almost guarantee you, oh, I won't because I'm not legally allowed to, but I will almost guarantee you that we would be able to show a total cost of ownership in favour of Ultivault versus tape, hands down. And would love to have the opportunity to have a chat to you about that. The other thing that we let you do is it's an open ecosystem in the sense that not only from the front end you can back up from whatever you want, you don't have to use a proprietary NetApp data mover to get the data onto the Ultivault, you can use whatever you want. But also the back end, you're not locked into whatever cloud you choose. So if you chose, let's say AWS, and then you're, you know, senior IT gets a new EA with Microsoft, signs off a new EA, and as part of that new EA, you get a whole ton of Azure credits that you want to start leveraging. We have a effectively two-click cloud agility feature where we will help you migrate your data from original cloud, call it AWS, to new cloud. And we'll do that all online, no disruption. So while it's doing the migration, and it doesn't have to reinflate the data to its full original size, it maintains the dedup and compression while it does this. But while it's doing that migration, if you perform a restore, we'll figure out whether we've already migrated those bits of data and pull it from the right place. So it's completely non-disruptive. And you can still do new backups to the box, which of course we will send to the new cloud bucket while we're still pulling stuff from the old. We just make that all easy. So that's a good feature there, so you're not locked into the back-end cloud. So really what we've done with Ultivault, it is very simple, and I know that probably many vendors say that their product is simple, but I will jump into the demo now and show you that there is not a lot to configure here. There's not a lot of what I call nerd knobs, right? Things that you can go and tweak and tune. It's pretty, pretty simple, and in fact, to say that you could get this up and running in 30 minutes, you could, you know, that's being very generous. You'd be able to get up and running in much less time than that. So it's very much a drop-in replacement for tape, and you just redirect your backup software to point to this rather than where it's currently going, and you're up and running. It's very efficient. As I said, we've got customers getting upwards of 25, sometimes 30 to 1 reduction. And when we're talking about large backup sets, that makes a huge difference. And that's what tips it in the favour of a solution like this versus an on-premise equivalent, right, for in terms of the economics of backup. We support anything on the front end, as I said, and a whole bunch. It's about 21 different cloud providers on the back end, and that keeps growing. Every 2 to 3 months, we release a new release of the OS running on the Ultivault, and where we've been doing work to qualify even more clouds. And some of the cloud providers in Australia, like Interactive and Dimension Data and so forth that I've already mentioned, they are all going through the process at the moment of being out of standing up Australian-based object stores that are Ultivault certified and will hopefully, you know, be able to appear in the drop-down list when you go to choose your cloud target. So you can choose, you know, if you want to go to an Australian provider, then that's going to be this. And you, as I said, you can already do it now with a private cloud solution with OpenStack or NetApp's storage grid. Otherwise, you can choose some of the, you know, the big-name public cloud providers that are in-country, if that's a big concern to you, Microsoft, Amazon, in-country, SoftLayer, in-country. So, you know, very, very open system. And the security, I didn't really go into this in enough detail, really. The encryption keys, you set them. Only you know them. 256 AES encryption. It supports rotation of keys. It supports external key management using the KMIP protocol, right? Key Management Interchange Protocol. So you can actually have, if you have in your environment, some kind of hardware-based encryption key management system like SafeNet or IBM Tivoli has a system as well. We fully integrate with that. So you don't have to manage the keys locally on the device, or you can if you don't have an external key management system, okay? So that's security is paramount to this. You cannot turn off encryption. It is mandatory on the box. So this is what it does, okay? We've got a number of different models, as I've just described. The physical appliances, that, you know, no presentation from a vendor is complete without a spec sheet, right? So, you know, got to humour me on that. But we've got our physical appliances, starting with the AVA 400, which can go up to a logical capacity, so the amount backed up, of about 28 petabytes, or our largest physical appliance can go up to 57 petabytes of protected data. Right? So huge scale, but we can also go right down to some of our virtual appliances in the middle there, the AVA V8, so an 8 terabyte virtual appliance that, as I said, you can deploy. You know, maybe you've got branch offices, or just, you know, you just don't have the size of data set that needs a physical, then you can go with one of these virtuals as well. And then I mentioned the cloud appliances that you can deploy natively into Amazon and Microsoft. And we're intending to release that in more cloud platforms as customer demand comes in. All right, well, that was a lot of talking, so let me get into a demo and show you what this thing looks like. All right, so this is the web-based management interface to an AltaVault. So it is, it's fully web-based. So when you first boot it up, you know, if it's a physical appliance, you just give it an IP address via the serial console, and then the rest is done from this web-based interface. Now, this one I've already configured, because you don't want to see me going through a setup wizard, and it's connected to Azure as the back-end cloud. And you can see here I've sent 80 gigabytes worth of data, backup data, to this appliance, and it's crushed it down to only 3.8 gigabytes of actual capacity required, which represents a 21.04 to 1 deduplication and compression savings for this for the workload that's already gone in there so far. Right. So what I'm going to do to show you an example of how this works, I've got some test data sitting here on this virtual machine that I'm running this demo from. I'll show you the properties of this. So it's 3.74 gigabytes worth of a bunch of files. I'm going to do this demo using just Windows Explorer, copy and paste, because it's easy to demo. I could show you with, you know, Commvault or something like that, but it's not really the point. The point is, no matter how you want, you can copy data to this. You can use RoboCopy. As I said, you can do direct dumps from SQL. You can use a backup application, or you can use any combination of all of that. You can use rsync, anything, right? Because it just, the AltaVault appears on the network as many SIF shares and as many NFS exports as you want to create on it, right? So here I'm mapped Z drive on this virtual machine to a SIF share on the AltaVault, and I've just created a bunch of folders notionally emulating if I was doing full backups. So if I go in here and I just come back to my set of test files, right click, copy, right click, paste. And I'll go back to the interface here and go to reports front end throughput. So this is going to show that there's data coming into this appliance on the front end, which is the SIFs or NFS shares. So we'll just wait for the graph to refresh, and you'll see that the data is going to start coming in. There it goes. So it's sort of up around 60 megabytes per second. This is a lab environment. It's only 1 gig. It's not going to be high throughput. The appliances, the physical appliances, can do up to 9 terabyte an hour of ingest performance. So it's basically as big as any customer has asked us yet. So that's pretty good. All right, so it's basically just accepting those files in on the front end. What I'll do is I'll shift to the replication report. And what this is going to show is how much data at this point in time is outstanding that needs to be sent to the cloud. In other words, it's deduped whatever it can, but now it has to. There is some things that it hasn't been able to dedupe that needs to be sent to the cloud. And I, as I showed you before, the data set size that I was copying in there was 3.74 gigabytes. I only had about 2 megabytes worth of data that needed to be transferred then. So it's basically deduped and compressed the hell out of that and found so much commonality. And let me just minimize that. And now it's finished its replication. Oh, there's 500 kilobytes to go, but basically finished synchronizing with the cloud because there was so little that it had to send up there because it deduped and compressed it, right? So it doesn't send over and over again. So it's very efficient on your WAN, and of course, it occupies much less space in the cloud, which again means that you're getting much better savings. Your effective cost per gigabyte is a hell of a lot less. All right, so it's now it's finished its replication. So if I go to storage optimization report, you'll see here, this is showing across time what is the red space, well, sorry, the blue line, or the blue area, is showing what's the logical amount of backup data that has come into the device. So it's now up to 84 gigabytes, 84.4. And the red is what has actually consumed space in the cloud, which is now just 3.8 gigabytes. And so now it's representing a 22.07 to one deduplication factor. And if I were to run that again, I mean, this is what happens when in a typical environment with typical enterprise backup applications, you do daily incrementals, and then on the weekend you do a full, and then you do daily incrementals, and then you do weekend full, and then month end you might either run a completely new full or you save the last weekly full as your monthly and you just change the retention and so on and so on. And every time you do a full, 98% of the data is identical to the last time the full. But backup applications do all sorts of stuff and put headers, as I was saying. So often, it's not seen as the same as the past. But with the Altavolt, we are, as I was saying, able to pull apart those proprietary formats that these backup applications use and find the commonality. So if I just back this up again, just to use this as an example, send that to another folder and then go back and do it again to there. So I'm running a sort of, some concurrent. Again, this is a lab environment, so it's not going to perform all that well doing this ingest. I'll just go back to this front-end throughput and have a look. More data's coming in on the front end of this appliance. And while that's happening, let's see if there's anything happening that we can see on the back end in terms of after it's deduped and compressed it, which it's doing on the wire, on the fly. And you can see the scale has changed, right? That this is now down at 7 megasecond, right, in terms of the throughput on the back end as it's sending it out to the cloud. Again, if I show the replication report, you'll see that, okay, I've got a megabyte left to transfer, even though the copy is still happening, so that'll probably stay up there for a little bit. But as this happens, it just constantly updates the storage optimization graph. And so you'll see that that number, I was at 22.07 to one deduplication. What are we at now? Now 22.99, right? And that'll just keep going up as it finds more duplicates in this stream of backup that's coming into the box. So I'll just let that keep running, but I'll switch back to the presentation. Any questions on that demo? Nothing? Okay. So look, that's actually all I wanted to cover here. What I want to show you is that we have this available as a virtual appliance that you can download for yourself. And in fact, I think everyone in here might have got a USB key on their way in that has the Altavolt software on it. It comes preloaded, and I think it was both the Hyper-V and VMware version that we put on there. It comes preloaded when you install it with a 90-day full-featured key. So you can fully use it. As I said, you'll be able to be up and running, connected to the cloud in under 30 minutes, and try it out. So don't believe me and don't believe my lab, you know, testing of getting that kind of deduplication. Run your own backup set at it. Just duplicate your policy if you've got Commvault or Veritas or whatever. You know, you're sending a certain amount, or you're sending all of your backups in one particular direction. Just pick a sample and say duplicate that to not only continue to back up where it currently does, but also to the trial AltaVault appliance, and just see what it gets. Again, it's all encrypted, so where the data, you know, where it goes to the cloud, it's encrypted. So what you need to do is you don't need to go and format the cloud or expunge that data or anything. You just delete the bucket in the cloud. Right? You don't have to go and demand that all of copies of it are possibly removed from all over that cloud. It's encrypted. It's complete gibberish. You just rotate the encryption keys and that's it. No one, even yourself, could ever get back to that data once you rotate those encryption keys. So it's really, really low risk, well, no risk in my opinion, but you know, you might consider it low risk to try this out, and certainly no investment other than your time to try it out. We've also got a way for you to try this out for no cost natively in the cloud. So if you go to netapponcloud.com, we have the AltaVault, which I've talked about today, but we also have some other cloud technologies that you can actually run a test drive of, where NetApp actually spins up all of the infrastructure. If physical infrastructure is required, we've got it there, and we just activate a new tenancy on our existing infrastructure for you to try out our cloud integrated products, AltaVault, NetApp Private Storage, and Cloud on Tap. And look, with that, I'd like to thank you. We are going to draw the raffle now, so hopefully everyone here has their raffle tickets, right, and fingers crossed, we'll see who wins. But also, please complete the evaluation. I do read it, and I will like to be invited back next year, so please give me a high rating, otherwise don't bother completing it. And, there are plenty of other sessions, I'm sure. You've still got the rest of today and half of tomorrow to go to more sessions. But just before we run the raffle, I'll just take some more questions. There was one just here. Yep. Yeah, so the question is, if you've got workloads running in the cloud and you want to back them up, what can this do that? And so the answer is yes, absolutely. You can spin up an AltaVault cloud appliance into the cloud, assuming it's either AWS or Azure. They're the two clouds that we support our appliance in at the moment. So is it one of those that as an example, that you're thinking? So let's say it's Azure. You've got some VMs running in Azure. You can spin up the AltaVault appliance in Azure, right? So basically next to the workload that you're running in Azure, and then you can back those Azure VMs up to that AltaVault appliance just as if they were virtual machines on-premise backing up to a physical AltaVault. So you would still use some kind of data mover, whether that be just doing Windows backup or SQL native dump, or whether you use Veeam, or whether you use Commvault, or whether you use Veritas. It doesn't matter what you use, but it's however you would have done it on-premise, you can do it, but keep it all within the cloud. So if it was Azure, you could back up from the Azure VM via whatever data mover or natively to the Azure AltaVault appliance, and then that AltaVault appliance in Azure could be, the back-end cloud could be Azure storage, or we actually have a customer doing this. The AltaVault Azure appliance is actually backing up to Amazon, so they get cross-cloud redundancy. It's just what they decided to do. So that's all possible.
And just a point that you made earlier about the dedupe and keeping those. The example you had was taking a full backup and then comparing that to the next full backup, and then the delta is actually
what actually gets sent. If there's unique data after one full backup to the next.
So yep. Comparing that to, say, an on-site backup where you've got multiple backups and multiple tapes, you've got separate copies of that data.
Mm-hmm.
Does that now mean that your copy of that data in the cloud is one?
Is one. So the question is around redundancy, right? When you've got tape backups, each set is a full copy, if you like. It's a full backup. Questionable whether it's actually readable, but you know, depending on how it was treated. But okay, assume that it is safe. How is this solution any better or is it worse than that? So when you choose one of the public cloud providers like Amazon or Azure, by default, they will store three copies of your data in their cloud, by default at a minimum, unless you specifically go in and say, I actually only want you to store one, which is not our recommendation, so you leave it at the default. You can also choose even further levels of redundancy to say, not only do I want the three copies which is kept within the localized region, so let's say Azure Sydney, but also give me another three copies that are asynchronously created in a partner region, which would be Melbourne in the example of Azure. So what that means is you get six copies, right, and Azure call that geographically redundant storage, GRS, six copies, and they provide you the SLAs. I mean, I'm not an expert in their SLAs, but it's something like they provide an availability guarantee of six or seven nines, which is that they guarantee that it's there if you it's up when you want to use the service, and they guarantee you a durability of 11 nines, and durability being that chances of loss, complete loss altogether, that you will never be able to recover your data. 11 nines. There is no tape solution ever created ever that can provide that level of assurity. Full stop. So it's more of a comfort thing that to think that, well, I've got these tapes and it's my full copy. That's great. So I guess from that perspective, we can't compete with the comfort factor, but in terms of technically, it is a superior level of availability and redundancy for your data. Question up the back. Yep, good question. So I'll just repeat it. So the question was, if when you're using GRS, so geographically redundant storage in Azure, if the primary region that you set up that storage container, let's say it was Sydney, if for whatever reason the Sydney data center for Azure goes away, for whatever reason, how does AltaVault handle that? Actually, Microsoft, with their global load balancing, handles that. So the URL that AltaVault uses to connect to the primary bucket remains the same, and Microsoft redirect and make it completely transparent so that the data just happens to be coming from Melbourne. We won't even know. AltaVault won't know because we're just pointing to the same URL. All right. Second question. So, okay. Okay, yeah, so the question is about scaling and what are the scale points. So with the virtual appliances, if you start with the 8 terabyte virtual appliance and then you find that your requirements exceed that, then you can upgrade to the 16 or the 32 terabyte virtual appliances, and you need to give it more storage from your virtualization layer, so whatever the primary storage that you're using for that, and get a new license to enable you to address the additional capacity. If you go beyond the virtuals, you can upgrade. Basically, you can get a physical, and we can do the similar to a DR situation where you import the configuration from the virtual appliance into the physical appliance, and then it takes over from where the virtual left off, and then they scale, as you saw, up to many, many petabytes worth of capability. But a long-winded way of getting to your question, let's say you go right off the other end of that, then you would need to start a new backup to another appliance. So you've been backing up to this thing for a long, 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 long time. You would effectively then have to close that off for new backups and use that only for retrievals of backups of anything that's gone into it, and start backing up anew to another physical or virtual appliance, depending on what you're... We haven't had someone come up against the upper limits of the AVA 800 yet, but sure. Yeah.
The world's bumping along, we'll fill it up.
Sure,
it's like a
disc attack. Yeah, fair enough. Any other questions, or you're all eager to see if you've won the Surface Pro 4?
Those days ago for capacity, are they based on the source data size, or are they actual
sorry, so just so I confirm your question, are the storage size or the capacity sizes that the appliance spec sheet showed, are they based off the source incoming or the result after it's all been did? Yeah, it's based on the result. So if you backed up 80 terabytes, but we managed to get 10 to 1, and so we crushed that down to 8, then that would technically fit into the 8 terabyte virtual appliance. Does that make sense?
Okay, so that's yeah. After your...
Yes, it's after deduping compression. That's what those numbers come in. So, yeah, a lot greater source amount could fit into those appliances than the numbers suggest. Another question at the back? Yep. Yep, good question. So when the backup application, because it doesn't know that we've actually sent this to the cloud, right? So it thinks it's written it to this SIF share, that's where it is. When it goes to do the retention of that particular backup is come to an end according to its policy. So it goes, okay, well, I now need to delete that backup that I did 6 months ago if that was what the retention was. It will tell the AltaVault this particular backup set, delete, and the AltaVault, if you set it up this way, which it is the default way, but you can override this behavior, the AltaVault will go and honor that and go and delete it from the cloud, except if there are duplicates referencing it, in which case we will just update the reference count to say, well, now there's one less thing referring to that common set of blocks or chunks that we break it up. Right, yeah, no, that's a great point. Yeah, so tape to actually expire data off tape is a pain. It's basically can be instant. If you say expire it from the backup app, or if I went in and clicked delete from those files that I just did a copy and paste, it will be gone from the cloud. Now you can override that behavior using permissions on the SIF share. So you can say that this particular application that is mounting this SIF's share using a particular user, it's all domain authentication supported and everything, can create files, create directories, but they can't delete. So you can avoid accidental deletions as well. And that's it's fully documented as to how to do that. Question over there?
Do you work with vendors, software backup vendors, about best practice guides for optimal compression?
Absolutely. So we have all of the ones that I listed there, bar, I think, ArcServe or some of the more boutique ones. We have a full best practice guide on each one. What do you use?
Veeam.
Veeam? Yep, absolutely. So you can just go, look, come and see me afterwards. I can send you the guide. They're reasonably easy to find, but not everything can be easily found with a couple of clicks, so I can get it for you. Good question. Anything else? Surface Pro time? Cool, all right. Oh, it's down there. Too quick for me. Now, if you're interested, there is a big sheet here about the terms and conditions that this competition is being run under. But hopefully, under full disclosure, I'm doing this here and I'm not looking. All right, random, not looking.
Does a NetApp employee win?
No, a NetApp employee cannot win. All right, the ticket number is green, F for Fred, 19. There you go. Congratulations. Come up. We've got to get a photo and tweet you. Well, look, I really appreciate everyone coming along. Hopefully it wasn't just to see if you could win this. Hopefully you did actually also get something out of this. Please come and see us at the booth. We've got lots to discuss. So thank you very much. Congratulations. Where are you from?